You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's one of my favorite times of the week. It's an opportunity to field your questions. You never know what you're going to hear about during Q&A with Layla. It may be something that pertains to your health predicament or that of a loved one or an acquaintance. And that means that we'll impart information that helps to clarify what's going on. So that's our remit here on Intelligent Medicine. With me today is Layla Mutin, co-host of our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Okay, and establish your credentials. Like, how is it that you belong on a podcast answering questions about nutrition? What are your academic bona fides?
My academic bona fides, I have a Master of Science in Nutrition and Exercise. I'm a registered dietitian. We like to call it also not just RD, but RDN, Registered Dietitian Nutritionist, because a lot of people piped up about, we don't like the word dietitian, we like the word nutritionist. Well, I am not ashamed of the word dietitian. And when I say I'm a dietitian, medical professionals know that that is the credential I have, and they go, oh, and CDN, which is Certified Dietitian Nutritionist. So a little bit of redundancy there, but that CDN is New York State. Whereas other states of our United States, it might be LD, licensed dietitian. In New York, it's certified dietitian nutritionist.
Okay, so you are legit.
And
I knew that.
Why do I have this podcast?
Yeah.
Why do I have this podcast?
Yeah.
Because of you, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay.
And you afforded me the opportunity, which I greatly appreciate.
And you also have a forum on Intelligent Medicine where you have your own individual podcast.
And yeah.
A contributor to our newsletter as well. So how long have you been collaborating on this? Time flies when you're having fun?
Oh, my God. 10, 11 years? I know we started the newsletter in 2013.
Indeed. Yeah. So we've been at it for some time. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to questions. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. And is a way that you can get us to eventually consider your question for a future episode of Q&A with Layla. But before we get to questions, we got some good ones today. Wanted to talk about something which is current. Did you know that this is October, is Health Literacy Month? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's an important
I did not know that because, yeah, I know. I think October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's also Cookbook Month.
Yeah.
I've never heard of Cookbook Month, but okay. So I've been thinking about recipes, but Health Literacy Month, this is long overdue.
Yeah. I think it's a laudable goal, but as I was thinking about it for a newsletter article I'm writing this week, the U.S., did you know there's such a thing as the U.S. Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion? I didn't know there was.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And
disease prevention. Yeah.
I didn't know there was such an entity. They have designated October Health Literacy Month. And a pithy definition of that is, quote,
a time to recognize the importance of making health information easy to understand and the healthcare system easier to navigate. And, you know, so this is, I think, right in our wheelhouse, making health information easier to understand. And I've written a book entitled How to Talk to Your Doctor About Complementary and Alternative Medicine. So it's been, you know, my mission statement to increase health literacy. And, you know, really it is enabling people to have the understanding and tools to evaluate health information and to access health information. You know, and clearly health practitioners have been notably poor at explaining health options to patients. They use a kind of med speak, which is cloaked in opaque terminology quite often. And as a result, I mean, there's a new phenomenon, which is that the internet and social media have opened up all kinds of new avenues for imparting health information. We've taken advantage of that. But it's a wild west of divergent and often contradictory opinions.
Absolutely.
Now this
and out and out misinformation as well.
Right, but
in the true sense of misinformation.
But the problem is this definition of misinformation and disinformation, which has been a way of kind of deplatforming information that doesn't fit the narrative, the government narrative, or the health authority, orthodox medicine narrative. So
they like to also call it malinformation.
Malinformation, in other words, malinformation is it's information that's bad. Now, have you ever heard?
Yes.
Is there information that's bad? I mean.
No. It doesn't go with the narrative that they want to propagate. So, propagate.
I think there is potentially information that's has potentially harmful consequences, but then you know where do you draw the line on that? And I'm a big health freedom advocate.
Me too.
The problem is that a lot of the health information we get is from big pharma with drug ads. I mean, and that's a form of health information that's commercialized and is a drive not merely to inform people, but to get people to opt for certain profitable drugs and procedures. So here's a quote that I found in my research from a study that looked at the amount of TV that people are watching and how much of these direct-to-consumer drug advertisements they get. Americans who watch average amounts of TV may be exposed to more than 30 hours of direct-to-consumer drug advertisements each year. I know for me, it's about quadruple that amount. You know, it just...
My goodness.
I mean, I was watching a ball game, you know, it's the baseball playoffs, right? And there were ads for... two very expensive medications, one for psoriasis and one for atopic dermatitis, which are...
Skyrizi and... I forget the other one.
See, they work for you. And Dupixent. Dupixent. But these are powerful new medications. So see how effective they are? So when we look at advertisements, 14% of ads were food-related. Approximately 91% of the food ad items included ultra-processed food products. The top three promoted products were soft drinks, alcoholic beverages, and fast food meals. So this is a form of health information. Then there's, you know, if you really want authoritative health information, where do you go to? You go to the American Heart Association, the American Diabetes Association, the ADA, and there you get truthful, accurate health information. Right, Layla?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. American Heart still believes that vegetable oils are good for you. The American Diabetes Association is there for you to continue having diabetes.
Yeah, I think that...
They will convince you that you will die without a carbohydrate.
Exactly, that carbohydrates...
And you will be diabetic the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Although there is another entity, Dr. Hoffman, that will be burgeoning once it gets off the ground, called the American Diabetes Society. Hopefully they'll be, which will be all about the truth and all of that.
Sort of a counterpoint to the ADA. Then there's also this phenomenon, which is medical information via press release, where immediately and uncritically, a lot of newspapers pick up stories that are issued by prestigious places like Harvard and Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins, where if you actually take the time to look at the study, which a lot of journalists are incapable of doing, or perhaps they don't want to take the time because they're on deadline, the study really doesn't say what the headlines purport that it says. So
true.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's as if the headline is false. And listen, back when I was an undergrad nutrition student, I was taught by my professors that you never only just read the abstract, because the abstract of a scientific study can be much different than what you're going to read throughout. So we're taught to trust nothing except our own eyeballs.
And speaking of trust, speaking of trust, there's another study which is headlined, Americans' Trust in Scientists, Other Groups Declines. But for good reason. I mean, why is that? Is that because of hucksters? No, it's actually, to some extent, is that the scientific establishment and health authorities have delegitimized themselves especially, through things like the food pyramid, which was a disaster, and also through—
And through COVID.
And through COVID, with the six-foot rule and plexiglass barriers and masking, which is a equivocal benefit, and also, efforts to deep six the narrative about lab leaks, which turns out to be a plausible origin story for COVID. You know, the people could get deplatformed for even sharing scientific information. But then again, there's Wikipedia. Yeah, Wikipedia is obviously a source of truth, right? I mean, that's very authoritative.
No, anybody can log into Wikipedia and change the information.
So here's—
Anybody can get in there and mess with it. No, Wikipedia is not a—
Here's what Wikipedia says about naturopathy. Quote, a wide range of pseudoscientific practices branded as, quote, natural, quote, non-invasive, or promoting, quote, self-healing. These are Dr. Evil quotes. Are employed by its practitioners. The ethics of naturopathy have been called into question by medical professionals, and its practice has been characterized as quackery. That's from Wikipedia. But surely they've got an objective opinion on acupuncture. So you look up acupuncture on Wikipedia. It says, acupuncture is a pseudoscience. The theories and practices of TCM are not based on scientific knowledge, and it has been characterized as quackery. Well, how about homeopathy?
That is so arrogant.
Yeah. Homeopathy fares no better on Wikipedia. The fundamental implausibility of homeopathy, as well as a lack of demonstrable effectiveness, has led to it being characterized within the scientific and medical communities as quackery and fraud.
This is all part of the propaganda machine, which in medicine typically really started with the Flexner report, which I believe started in the 1920s.
Yes, yes.
By the Rockefellers.
The effort to standardize medical education. Because look, we had what was called eclectic medicine, which is akin to naturopathy. And some of the practices were good and wholesome. And some of the practices, frankly, were kind of wackadoodle. They weren't scientific. So there was an effort, ostensibly a good effort to standardize medical science. And to teach only the high-tech orthodox medicine approaches in medical schools, which then supplanted, there used to be a Hahnemann School of Homeopathy, a medical school in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And it was eclipsed by the Flexner Report. So, I'm very well aware of that.
My goodness.
So
part of our Great Awakening, everybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're seeing some pushback against the narrative, capital N, with, efforts by some people, Callie and Casey Means have been very eloquent in their sort of attack on our American way of health, their criticism thereof. And, you know, I think there's some hope on the horizon. That's why we call this intelligent medicine. I mean, we haven't gotten a monopoly on intelligent medicine, but we try to take a more balanced view and a critical view sometimes of information from both sides of the fence. And that's why I think we have a listenership.
Yes. Yes. All about putting the truth out there.
So are you all ready to increase your health literacy? Because we're about to answer some of your questions. So hopefully,
exactly.
So
yes, yes.
Your health, your HQ, your health quality will increase.
Yeah. But before we jump into questions, I think it would be a good time to hear from one of our sponsors.
Indeed it is. Let's listen to a message from one of our sponsors. Here it goes.
If you're having to stretch every dollar a little further these days, you're not alone. At Kyolic, we've got some tips, free samples, and coupons to help you keep costs down. Go to kyolic.com/radio for yours. With a budget-conscious diet and smart supplement shopping, you can navigate higher prices while maintaining your physical and financial health. Look for multifunctional supplements like Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Kyolic offers formulas to support cholesterol, blood pressure, circulation, blood sugar balance, stress relief, and more for men and women. Aged Garlic Extract is backed by clinical studies that have shown it to provide many cardiovascular and immune health benefits. To help you stay healthy on a budget, get free Kyolic samples and in-store coupons on our website. Go to kyolic.com/radio. That's kyolic.com/radio. Kyolic aged garlic extract formulas are available at natural health retailers and online.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you via their underwriting. And so now back to our questions.
Okay. We've got an email from Eva. I would love to hear your view on consuming lectins. I read a lot about not eating them, but I don't want to restrict my foods unnecessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, lectins. And this was first brought to the fore by, I'm sure many of our listeners have heard the book and of Dr. Stephen Gundry.
Uh-huh.
Quite often, we've discussed it. We've discussed the plant paradox.
Yep.
And he's talked a lot about lectins.
Yep.
These are anti-nutrients in plant foods, mostly in grains and beans, legumes, but also some in the skin of some produce as well as the seeds and so forth. These are kind of the anti-nutrients or things that would inhibit their digestion and absorption.
And this is part of plant's natural defenses.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
To the extent that plants want to propagate, they are attractive to animals. Animals mm-hmm. Eat them because plants don't have locomotion. They utilize animals who eat the seeds, for example, trot over to the other side of the mountain and then deposit the seeds in a new location where the plants can take root.
Along with fertilizer, yes.
So it makes sense, along with fertilizer, right? It's a mm-hmm. natural process. So it behooves the plant to, on the one hand, attract animals, but on the other hand, to protect their reproductive pathway by including some, quote, anti-nutrients that interfere with digestion, which might, if they weren't present, then the seeds would be digested and they wouldn't be excreted properly. So there are a variety of lectins. They're phytohemagglutinin sometimes. So they may have, and frankly, there are some poisons in plants because plants also want to protect themselves. So these lectins, have sometimes poisonous properties which repel animals.
Right.
Because
plants can't run away. They can't run away like another animal.
Right.
Right.
So lectins figure very prominently in the plant paradox. And mm-hmm. This has been criticized because they say that Gundry creates such a exclusionary diet that it really courts food obsessiveness and, frankly, malnutrition, a very narrow spectrum of permissible foods. I have to just, you know, and so I've interviewed him, and he's a little extreme. But I got to tell you, just anecdotally, I think I've shared this on one of our podcasts. I go to my high school reunions, and invariably, there is a guy there, one of my classmates, who I barely knew, who comes up to me very excitedly, who says, "Thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing the information that you share. I was a patient of Dr. Gundry," and he describes how he was on death's door years ago. He had a very severe heart problem, and, you know, just, he was literally running on fumes. He discovered Dr. Gundry, and he went on Dr. Gundry's program, restrictive diet, certain supplements, blah, blah, blah. And he appears in robust health, and he says he completely turned it around on that paradigm. So I think that there may be a place for paying attention to lectins, but for ordinary healthy people, this is not a big consideration for me.
It's not a consideration for me personally, but we have had patients and clients over the years, I know I have, who have a lot of autoimmunity, who have a lot of issues, symptoms, some even disabling, very highly symptomatic, a lot of discomforts, where when we pare down the diet to something a little more paleo, where the legumes are gone, the grains are gone, maybe we'll need a nightshade or two. There are the major sources, and maybe certain vegetables and things we kind of watch a little bit. It just gets so much better. It's really something.
Another expert who focuses on lectins, and he's a brilliant guy, there's no question about it, is Dr. Diadamo, who has written The Blood Type Diet. And that is a controversial proposition, because I have seen people who eat completely contrary to their blood type, supposed diet, who are in robust health. You know, so for example, O's are supposed to be more towards the omni or carnivore side. I'm an O, and I follow that, and it works for me. But I have your vegan friends and colleagues who they're a type O and they do okay. So, it's also believed that some of that is on the basis of lectins, and certain foods have a triggering effect in blood types. And that's actually, there's some science there. So that you can, you know, maybe get some guidance from the blood type diets in terms of what maybe not to include in your diet because of the potential an interaction.
True. The one issue, and it's not just me, it's a lot of our colleagues, is that a lot of Diadamo's work in this area has basically been done in vitro rather than in vivo.
Right.
That's number one. Number two is a personal reason. My blood type is AB positive, and if I ate like that, I'd be in trouble.
That's sort of a Venn diagram, you know, to quote a popular politician who loves Venn diagrams.
Did I just laugh like that?
Yeah. Quit hysterically laughing. It doesn't, you know, it undermines your credibility. No. That if you do a Venn diagram between the restrictive A diet and the B diet, that's what you have for the AB blood type, right?
Yeah.
To some extent. Yeah. So it's pretty, and that's the least common blood type. This is actually thought to be the Jesus blood type, like a very unusual one. So anyway.
The other thing that I take a little issue with Dr. Gundry's work is I've seen him talk about how we need olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think we need olive oil the way he proposes. Like as if the food we eat is an olive oil delivery system.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Right. Although, not to discount the benefits of olive oil.
No. But olive oil's wonderful.
Yeah.
So you can do without it.
Yeah. So,
there's a lot there.
Some of the benefits of the carnivore diet, which is being espoused by some people for conditions like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, but also for autoimmunity, as you say, may stem from its virtual absence or reduction of lectins, which come primarily from plants, but also can be imparted to animal products by virtue of you are what you eat eats. You know, you can get uptake of lectins in you know, animal products that are where animals consume lectins. So I, you know, I think it's okay. And like you say, if the blood type diet worked, see, there's a lot of assertions in there. And if you're a scientist, you have to test each of those assertions. Yeah. And so, and with humans, it's harder because humans have a longer lifespan. With mice, they live, I don't know, 36 or 48 months, 60 months at most. And with humans, you'd have to, you know, do studies over generations to see what the effect of each and every one of these recommended interventions, like don't eat this, eat that, or, you know, but that's a, each one is a scientifically testable hypothesis, which, you know, needs validation. So that's the problem.
And I would say to Eva about lectins, cook your food, cook your produce. You're not going to eat a raw kidney bean. A raw kidney bean is actually toxic. Not just forget the lectins. It's actually toxic. You're not going to eat raw grains. You want to cook things. You want to cook them well. You don't want to undercook any of these. And this reduces lectins. Even Dr. Gundry, he talks about using a pressure cooker to almost completely annihilate the lectins. You know, there are things to do. There are cooking methods and you could still enjoy your food. And this is such a great question.
And it's really one of the controversies. But I take a middle ground on that. I don't think it should be dismissed out of hand. On the other hand, I think that it does sometimes appeal, unfortunately, to people who are food obsessives. And that can be deleterious psychologically.
Some people find themselves backed into a corner. I can't eat anything but, you know, chicken and pears and a banana and romaine lettuce. That's a little ridiculous.
It's a recipe for disaster.
You know, that now we're sitting on, now we're flirting with an eating disorder. So we have to come back from that and realize, and pay a little more attention to your body, how you feel, what you want, like that. A little more self-nurture in this area rather than being so restricted.
I mean, like simple things like fun. Some people say, you know, I really like to eat bread, but I just feel crappy, you know, or like when I eat pizza, you know, it's delicious, but then I just, I pay for it, you know. So, well, pay attention to your response to that.
Right. Pay attention to all of that. Oh, and there's another interesting thing. Like somebody with a wheat allergy will say, well, yeah, I eat wheat and I don't feel good. I feel sluggish. My stomach hurts. Something happens. But I went on vacation to Italy, they'll tell me.
That whole thing.
Where they ate pasta and bread and everything was fine. How come I didn't have any reaction there? And I tell them two reasons. A, you were on vacation, so your stress level was way down. You know,
there's
your bucket was not full for you to be reactive and touchy and all of that. Number two, in Italy, the wheat crop is far less glutinous than the wheat crop in America.
Yeah, also and less glyphosate, as you were about to say.
Less glyphosate, yes. So all of this adds up to why you didn't react so much when you were on vacation in Italy.
Indeed, Wait, isn't it really challenging to parse these things out? You know, there's so many factors involved. All right, let's tackle another question.
Okay, we've got one here from Charles. I'm a 72-year-old male, and I'm trying to stabilize a hypertensive state. Of grave concern is nocturnal spiking and waves or spells, as I'd call them. These are brief but intense episodes of acute distress, and this could happen at any hour. He's taking potassium, he's taking magnesium, he's taking other great things like taurine, liposomal taurine, and grapeseed, and all these great things, serrapeptazidase and hawthornberry. What else should I be doing? What else should I be looking for?
You know, there's several things going on here. Having blood pressure that's unstable is a sign of autonomic instability and autonomic dysfunction, or dysautonomia, it's sometimes referred to. And, you know, as you age, sometimes your autonomic nervous system goes awry, or with certain conditions, you know, people who have long COVID, you know, will have dysautonomia. They'll have POTS, you know, postural orthostatic
yes.
tachycardia syndrome, which is an instability of the autonomic nervous system. And, you know, also sometimes, you know, men as they get older may have something that's akin to menopause, you know, that, hormonal mm-hmm. fluctuations or, you know, lack of certain hormones could have an impact on that too. So that's a, you know,
yeah.
Menopausal hot flashes are a form of autonomic dysfunction.
Charles yeah. says, my understanding of the true cause of high blood pressure is insulin resistance and inflammation.
Not invariably.
We only know Charles's, yeah, not invariably. And we don't know Charles's age.
Yeah.
We don't know his weight.
Don't have
or any of those other
things. Weight. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, if there is that, Charles, you know, if you're a little overweight, that might be the culprit as well, but not specifically all the time.
Yeah. And so there are ways to directly impact your autonomic nervous system. You can do, you know, exercise certainly has a beneficial effect, particularly resistance exercise, because in resistance exercise, when you Valsalva or when you hold a plank, you will actually control your breathing in a way that brings up your parasympathetic nervous system, which lowers blood pressure. So you can also directly stimulate your autonomic nervous system, your parasympathetic or your vagal nerve with ear acupuncture. There are now devices that you can use that you can apply a clip to your ear I've actually interviewed, I did a whole podcast that you can find where we talk about vagal nerve stimulation. It's actually used as a treatment for a variety of things, for even depression. So VNS, vagal nerve stimulation, there's a whole lot about that. There are natural ways to stimulate your vagus, and there are also ways to do it via devices now. I think it's a whole emerging area of medicine and with some really profound implications for health. Not just with controlling hypertension, but with pervasive benefits through the body. And I think this guy is relying a little too much on supplements or nutrients for blood pressure control. I mean, did he mention dietary nitrates, which we're actually going to talk about in part two?
Celery seed extract. Yeah. That would be another way.
Yeah.
In fact, and Charles, another nice thing, this is a yoga thing to do, is left nostril breathing to activate your parasympathetic nervous system. You pinch your right nostril, so you're only quietly breathing through your left nostril for a few minutes. That might help. It might help in the short term.
And even
anyway.
There's a variation of that, which is alternate nostril breathing, which I sometimes use.
Yeah.
I've used that when I feel tired on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Although my sleep quality must be much better because that rarely happens. But when I was really working, you know, crazy hours, I would get that because of a sleep deficit. I'd feel like drowsy on the road, and I would use the alternate nostril breathing, and it would bring me into a state of alertness often.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
all these things, all these little tips and tricks, little hacks.
But this is, I mean, this kind of nighttime blood sugar, blood pressure spike. Consider blood sugar as well, because hypoglycemia can cause kind of an alarm signal in the body. So you have unstable
blood
sugar.
And then cortisol.
That could be an issue. Yes.
Cortisol will go up, and then that can cause the spike in blood pressure. Wow. Yeah.
So, I think
Charles,
we're not running a comprehensive approach. But look, the conventional way to deal with this is to give you more and more and more blood pressure medication until you cover the high blood pressure, but when you're on that much medication, you may encounter the opposite problem, which is low blood pressure, where you feel weak and woozy and even experience a risk of falls.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. So be careful of. All right. Charles, best of health to you.
There you have it. All right. All right. Time to tell our listeners that we're going to go to part two. So follow us to part two and give us a preview, Layla, of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Lisa says, there's been a lot of chatter on social media lately about the importance of magnesium. I take magnesium glycinate, but is that the only one to take? Is there something else I should be doing?
Okay, great. We'll tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Newton, because it's a weekly Q&A with Layla. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. That's the tricky part, is drhoffman.net. Questions@drhoffman.net. We'll be back in just a moment, part two.